evening. Now, my guest this evening found fame in the mid-80s supporting Bucks Fizz and David Essex. They were part of a band called G.I. Orange. They were Simon, Carl and Mark Whitworth, and also Gary Holt as well, who made up that band. I'm pleased to say Simon is with me this evening to chat about his new Christmas single. We'll talk about that in a moment, Simon. But as ever, the great British talking point is the weather. What's it like where you are on the Isle of Wight?
Yeah, like John. Pretty much the same as it is up there. There's no snow, but the Gritters are out. I like your names for them, actually.
Gritters. Yeah.
That's really good, isn't it?
It's a great idea that Lancashire County Council came up with, that they get members of the public to, when they get a new Gritter, they have a competition for people to name that Gritter. I like Gritty Gritty Bang Bang. That's one of my favourites.
Yeah, that is the best one, yeah.
And Snowby Gone Kenobi.
they're very clever, actually. Yeah,
absolutely.
I like it.
Yeah, I reckon you could come up with a song for that, because you just love writing songs. We'll talk about that in a moment. We'll chat about the new single. But first of all, what do you remember about those heady days of being with G.I. Orange?
It is a long time ago, but the memories never leave you. For us, it was strange because we were famous in a totally different country, and this is before the internet was really up and running. So we'd leave this country, not famous at all, just four young lads. We'd arrive in Japan, superstars. So within an 18-hour flight, it's almost you went from being nothing to famous. So it was a strange thing to get your head around, but we had the most wonderful time, and I wouldn't change it for the world. It was just outrageous, funny, just idolised wherever you went, but it all had to come to an end at some stage, and it did abruptly.
why do you think you had so much success in Japan? Were you marketed over there? What was the, you know, what was the behind that?
It was a funny thing. We were initially signed to EMI, and they put us on tour with Bucks Fizz, and we felt that wasn't really our direction. Although Bucks Fizz were a great band, they were very ultra pop, and we were a bit more like Duran Duran or a-ha. So we left EMI. Went back round the pubs and clubs, like the Marquee Club in London, the Greyhound Fulham Palace Rose. And we got picked up by a Japanese scout from CBS Sony. And we made a couple of records, and they were released in Japan with some great videos. We weren't really sure of what was happening out there for us until we arrived, and we were greeted with a couple of thousand fans at the airport on our first visit, and that the rest is history. It was just thrown into this sort of mania of the band. And to be honest, I don't think it was so much, to be frank, really, it was the way we looked that made us famous out there. We were just a good boy band. Although we could play well, that became secondary to what we actually were. I saw the image of the band took over the musical talent, as it were. And so, yeah, it was great, but not really what you go into music for.
Well, in 2015, you went back, didn't you, to Tokyo? I think you played a couple of gigs over there.
Yeah, we did. That was brilliant, actually. We arrived at the airport, and there was there wasn't so many fans there.
Had your image changed?
No, it's all changed. But there was this group of women, the sort of, you know, older women, and we're looking and thinking, what are they getting so excited about? Because yourself, you never see yourself changing, do you?
That's the thing.
You don't. It was, we thought, what are these? Where's all the young ladies, you know? But there's a group of older women. They realised they were our fans growing up. So, and they must have been looking at us arriving, thinking, where's those young men gone?
Absolutely.
You know? So it was, we went back and, because it was a 30-year anniversary from this album, Psychic Magic, which was fabulously successful out there. And we played a couple of shows, and it was brilliant. They've sold out. And Yeah, no, it was a marvellous experience. We could go back to our roots because we were a good band before we got turned into a product. So to go back and play as the band we originally were was fantastic.
Well, let's hear a little bit. Let's relive a few memories of you for you here this evening, Simon. This is Psychic Magic. The album, I think, was called Psychic Magic as well, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, yeah.
And as you say, that did very well over there, didn't it?
Oh, Matt, it was massive. It really was. We were making adverts for Suzuki with that song. All our tours were sponsored by Coca-Cola. It was just such a huge album, and Psychic Magic itself was such a huge record. It was number one for 8 weeks. It came off number one and went back on number one. We knocked off wow. Duran Duran, View to a Kill, Get Into the Groove by Madonna. So it was a wonderful record. Trouble is, when you have a record that popular, you can't match it because you don't know what made it that popular, you know. Well, so, but it was great.
Let's have a listen to it. Psychic Magic, G.I. Orange. Reliving a few memories for my guest Simon Whitworth tonight. Psychic Magic from the album of the same name, G.I. Orange. I've just took my guest, Simon, back to 1985. You were reliving it there. Real 80s feel to that, Simon.
Yeah, it was. We were using a lot of synths, and there was a keyboard called the Fairlight, which sadly for like bass players and drummers, your everything was then computerised. I was the bass player in the band, and I became obsolete overnight. So, because you would still write the parts, but then this computer could play them better than you could. And, well, that apparently.
There we are. Replaced by a computer, eh?
Yeah, back in the 80s. And never got in there since. But, you know, it was good. And as we were saying off air, it really is that 80s sound, yeah. Isn't it? It's unmistakable.
I mean, you say there, you know, back in the 80s, replaced by a computer. Is that now, of course, you don't do that, do you? You play every instrument yourself and go to the recording studio and record, don't you?
Yeah. I record it on the Isle of Wight with a really talented producer called Guy Page. And everything we use is a real instrument. We don't use computers at all. Occasionally, we use a synth for maybe a string part, but everything is just done fresh. And we make a record. When I go in there, because we've worked together so long, we will actually do a record from start to finish within 2 to 3 hours. And which is really good for me, because I have a really short attention span. So any longer than that in anywhere I'm bored. So it works really well. But then it keeps the energy there as well. If you're... because in the 80s, we would sit in the studio for weeks and weeks just listening to a bass drum, like, oh, is it sounding right? And it was ridiculous, really, because if you think back to the Beatles, they made the best records in the world, and they make them how I do now. They just played live.
And
so it was...
I know that you mainly write for other artists, but I think your main passion these days is to create music for yourself to perform and record, isn't it?
Yeah, I do. I love writing. I write every day. I write a new song, and but I think if I had one passion, it would be writing musicals, because I write novels and then I turn them into musicals, and that is more than often my best work, I think, where I'm writing for a specific character and drawing on every element of my own life experience and every emotion I've ever felt. I can draw on and put it into that bit of music for that character. And it sounds radically different to the pop music I write. Although I love the pop music, if I had to leave anything for the world, it would be my musicals.
And let's talk about the musicals, because you've got a new novel coming out next year, about the middle of next year, called The Invisible Steps, and a musical of the same name. Just tell us a little bit about the characters, the music, what we can expect to see and hear, and read, of course.
I wrote the book. As I was writing the book, I'll tell you a brief outline of the book. It follows the story of a young girl called Jessie Granton, who lives on a floating land called Bluebell Wood with a Bella, which is a woodland creature with human characteristics. Now, from this land, they can see 24 hours into the future, and they're supposed to stop evil happenings on the earth below, or disasters happening, just not by saying, oh, a disaster's going to happen, but they can change the sequence of events. But unfortunately, evil is rising from the earth, and they've tapped into this gift as well, and it's leveled the playing field. And Bluebell Wood is now fragmented around Jessie and Bella, so they have to return to Earth. And that's where the story really starts. It's like a Da Vinci Code for children. It's massive on friendship and loyalty. And the heroes in it are the most unlikely heroes, the people that have been ousted by society. So it's got a really strong message in it. It's a real mystery. And it's actually 11 plus. That's the age group it's aimed at.
But obviously, it's been written, the musical. So when do you, you know, will you have a say in the casting and who'll play the parts, etc.?
To be honest, I'll be happy for anyone to be casted.
Right, <yeah.
laughs> I would love to have a part. But I'm going to showcase the musical on the Isle of Wight in July at a place called the Key Arts, which is a small theatre, and that's on the 9th and 10th of July. And then I'm hoping to either take it to the Edinburgh Fringe or into St Albans, which is where the story's based, which is a town in Hertfordshire. So I've got massive plans for it, but it's going to be a lot of work, and But it has been a lot of work to get it to this stage. I don't think it will ever stop being a lot of work, to be honest, but it's worth it for me. It's worth it.
And as you say, you know, you just love writing. I think you record on your phone and then you go along to the recording studio and put the tracks down.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I'm not a fancy writer. I don't record at home. I don't write on the best equipment. I just pick up. I mean, the majority of my musical was written on a second-hand guitar I bought for £30. And I just play it. And then I used to just record onto a tape machine. But now I just put any ideas on the phone. When I've got it all sorted, I just phone up Guy. Pin my idea across to him and meet him a day later, and we just start recording. And that's it. I don't think I'll ever be any fancier than that. I'm just really basic in everything I do, but I find it gets the best results. Well, I don't overthink it.
Let's talk about the Christmas single, The Biggest Gift. I know that you've had quite a bit of promotion with this from Mark Dixon from Cumbria, who's a great promoter, isn't he, Mark?
Oh, he's a wonderful man. And honestly, he's so generous with his contacts and his guidance. He's been in the business for years, and I'm very grateful to have him on my side. He's been brilliant.
Let's hear The Biggest Gift. Tell me a little bit about it just before we play it.
Yeah, it's a song. As you grow out of being a kid, you don't really require anything as in gifts or presents, but all you really want to be with is the people you love or that special person you love, and that's all you need out of Christmas, and that's what the song's about. It's lovely. It's a lovely sentiment.
Around the tree, all the carols you sang with me, it's the love you gave to me all year long. It's not the snow that fell. See you.
The biggest gift, my guest tonight, Simon Whitworth. And in fact, I think you performed that live a little earlier tonight on the Isle of Wight, didn't you, Simon?
Yeah, I did. There's a Christmas shop which is open all year round, and it's I know.
I mean,
we're massive on Christmas on the Isle of Wight.
Wow, that's brilliant. In fact, there's not one, there's two, you tell me.
There's two Christmas shops. I don't know what it is. Maybe we just can't give up Christmas. But it's I went there just to get that sort of a movie feel to the performance. And they opened up the shop for the evening, and they'd done mulled wine and hot chocolate, and so anyone that could turn up and they'd be there. All I had to do was donate to the charity, and then I performed. That song, The Biggest Gift, and because I knew I was performing there, I wrote three or four more Christmas songs for that evening. And also, I've done a version of The Biggest Gift for the local choir, and some of them turned up as well, and they sang it with me, and it was really lovely. It's just magical. I've had so much fun promoting this song, probably more fun than I've ever had in my music career. It's just been so pure. And,
wow, that's brilliant.
Yes, really lovely. It is. Yeah, yeah.
I'm just wondering what you can get at the Christmas shops in July. Is it all to do with Christmas stuff? Yeah, that's good. Well, do you know what? I suppose if it works out right, you can probably get them a lot cheaper in July than you can in December.
Yeah, they must hike the prices up, mustn't they?
Brilliant. Oh, listen, best of luck with that. It's a fabulous single. It's one of those earworms, I think, isn't it, that will be in your head for days to come. But lovely to chat to you, Simon.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for joining us this evening. A lovely song, that. From Simon Whitworth, my guest this evening, and The Biggest Gift on BBC Radio Cumbria and BBC Radio Lancashire.